It was a wild start to NFL free agency. The Browns take Osweiler and a second rounder off Houston, and it blows our minds. Kirk Cousins staying in Washington. Mike Glennon is the guy in Chicago. Patriots keep their roster churning. Jaguars winning another offseason. Alshon Jeffrey, Andrew Whitworth on the move. So much news. We've got it all on the MMQB 10 Things podcast, free agency special.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast, free agency special. We are, our minds are racing. Everything is going down here, and we just wanted to put out a special show where we sort of run down everything that has gone on in the early moments of free agency. I am Gary Gramling. I'm here with Andy Benoit. Andy, I think we're going to have to open with this Brock Osweiler trade.
Well, yeah, because what are the odds? First of all, I need to give like a warning to people. I've spent the last 2 days with Tony Jefferson going his free agency experience, which means my head has been in the clouds on a lot of this stuff. So I'm aware of what's happened. I've thought about none of it. So everything you hear from me is going to like be essentially my knee-jerk reaction, which I guess is the way we're supposed to do media these days anyway. So I'm right on top of things.
There you go. You were in like the isolation chamber, like in the final round of Family Feud. And then they bring you out, and it'll be like that. It'll be a game show. So
it'll be fun. But yeah, this Osweiler thing. Remember last week we talked about like exactly what happened could never happen. So when I heard that, I thought, wait a minute, what?
We have to back up a moment here. And full disclosure, I mean, look, Andy and I, every week we put on our respective smoking jackets and we ascend to the top of our ivory tower with our snifters of Royal Crown Cola, the only beverage with a royal pedigree. And we dispense everything we know about football. And on the last show, Joseph Conroy, one of our loyal listeners, asked a question on Facebook about, I mean, he had the exact scenario. He didn't specify the Browns, but he said a team with a ton of cap space. The Browns obviously had the most cap space of all time this offseason, and specified Brock Osweiler. Would the Browns take on Osweiler's bad contract and basically buy a draft pick with it? And we said, you know, we said, go back to the NBA, Conroy. That doesn't happen in football. And
yeah.
Here we are. We were quite wrong. It happened, and I'm still shocked it happened. I'm mostly shocked it happened because we talked about this specific scenario, and I said, I said to our producer, Matt Havey, it's like, it's the equivalent of like coming on the show and announcing these won't be the winning Powerball numbers. And then having it come up as those are the winning numbers. And you sort of, I don't know, punch yourself in the face and move on with your life.
And I feel better that this – so basically, if people didn't hear the last show, what we're saying is we didn't think any team would ever trade a contract just for the sake of trading the contract for a variety of reasons, and the main one being the other team doesn't want the bad contract either. These are unprecedented circumstances because two things are going on with the Browns right now. One, they have an unbelievable amount of cap space, more than anyone ever. Two, nobody's wanting to take it from them. I told you, I was just with Tony Jefferson. He turned down $1.5 million more per year from the Browns than what the Ravens offered. So he went to their division rival there for less money. That's where the Browns are not getting the interest from other people around the league. Now, it's not completely true. Kevin Zeitler gladly took their money.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is the Browns have more money than they can spend right now. So to them, it's worth $16 million, but it's all relative. Their $16 million is not as valuable to them as that $16 million would have been to Houston, for example.
Yeah, and we've seen this happen to teams in the past. This was what the Raiders went through for a couple years, 4 or 5 years ago, where you have to pay a premium to get guys to come to your program because you're not going to win right now. So do you want to go to Cleveland and go 2-14 this year? That's not appealing to a lot of guys. Money is appealing to a lot of guys, so that's how you make up for it. The one detail I had wrong, and I admitted on the show, in my defense, that I was probably oversimplifying it. So when Osweiler was traded, his salary, his annual salary, the signing bonus aside, that comes off of the Texans' books as far as the salary cap goes. Texans also don't have to pay him the $16 million they would have owed him, but I don't know. I mean, $16 million is a lot of money, but it's not that much money to an NFL franchise. It is, but it's not. You know what I'm saying. So they actually had they released Osweiler, they would have it would have been a $19 million cap hit since they traded him. Part of that money basically gets transferred to the Browns. They only have to pay the accelerated signing bonus, so they only take a $9 million cap hit. If they just kept him on the roster, it was a $16 million cap hit, so you could say they saved either 7 or 10. But yeah, it was just, it's also sort of an odd deal because they had to throw in the, they had to swap this year's 4 for the Texans 6. So they're basically moving down 40 picks as well as picking up what you figure would be about the 53rd pick of the 2018 draft if the Texans are, as everyone expects, are good and you know are like a 9-7, 10-6 team at least. So I guess...
Yeah, the Browns are getting that from the Texans.
The Browns are getting that from the Texans.
Yeah. So the Texans gave up a second rounder to do this salary dump, which has to lead you to believe that this isn't over, that they weren't just doing that to save. I mean, you're not going to give away your second rounder for that kind of money. So they must have something they want to do with the money. They have to have a reason for this. And, you know, I don't, I mean, we could guess what the reason is. It'll show itself sooner than later because that's just, that's how these things go. But this is not done. These are moving pieces. And I don't know if Osweiler will even be a Brown. Keep in mind, if the Browns, for example, were to get Jimmy Garoppolo, his contract is small, so it's still affordable, much like they're still paying for overall the quarterback position what they would have anyway. They'll just happen to be giving their backup all the money this year, and Garoppolo will be the low figure. We don't know what's going to happen there.
Kind of like the Cowboys did last year.
Yes, yeah, with Dak Prescott being cheap and Tony Romo expensive. It could be exactly like that. Something else will move here, though, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, I would expect the Texans would be in on one of these veterans, and we don't really want to date the show in case something happens this weekend. We will be back with a regular show on Monday, and we'll obviously clean up anything that happens over the weekend. But I think they not only have room for one of these veterans, maybe a guy who played in the same state for the first part of his career, but they finally have a room to add a developmental guy as well. I mean, most teams don't carry 4 quarterbacks, but you know they have Tom Savage and that's it on the roster right now. So you can take one of these developmental guys in the second or third round and have your at least have a chance to groom your quarterback of the future.
Yeah, and I guess last thing I would say on this, it's easy to kick the Texans now. They're a little bit down. How embarrassing. You trade the guy literally one day less than a full year after signing him, Osweiler, that is. They'd never met him. They waste of money on a lot of fronts. They took a chance to try to find their quarterback, and they've got the defense to do that. They're a playoff, deep playoff, maybe Super Bowl caliber defense. And I can't fault a team for taking a gamble on a quarterback. The gamble didn't pay off, but guess what? They're living with the sunk cost. They're doing as much as they can to avoid the full damage of it, and they're going to take a gamble again this year because they're probably going to go sign somebody and try the whole thing all over again, and I don't blame them for that either.
Yeah. No, it is just a little bit stunning. I mean, it was a two-year deal, basically, that Osweiler got, and for him not to get to the second year is – Well, I mean, look, it's shocking.
They didn't. Yeah, they did. I mean, they did not like him there. It's obvious. But even just being around people from that organization the last few weeks, they knew what they had and they didn't like what they had.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the other weird part is, I mean, Osweiler is good enough to be on an NFL roster. He's not good enough to be an NFL starter. But, you know, you're probably talking about a guy who's one of the whatever top 50 or 60 quarterbacks in the league. And that's a. You know, that's a number two guy. That's a guy who you, in an emergency situation, can plug in there and maybe tread water with. So he has some value, not with the contract he's on. But
so how about the rest of – because Cleveland's kind of topic number two for us as well. They've done some other things with locking up Joel Bitonio and signing Zeitler. signing J.C. Treader. I guess we can surmise that they don't feel Cameron Irving, their first-round pick from 2015, they don't feel he's the right solution for the inside of their offensive line anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, he was, you know, Irving was the last regime, so they have no real love for him anyway. The thing with Irving was, he played all over the line at Florida State, and he was sort of billed as a guy who had some flexibility, and so, who knows, maybe they, I don't know, maybe they try him somewhere else on the line. I don't think they do, but I guess it's maybe an option. They have some young guys like Sean Coleman who maybe are answers on the outside in the long run, but yeah, it looks like they're pretty nicely solidified over the next couple of years with the interior line, and that's not a bad way to start.
It's not. They still have overall, I'm not over the top about the way this offseason has gone for them. I know you know, they have an issue at right tackle. Austin Patzer's a free agent, and he really isn't a long-term guy there. You mentioned Sean Coleman, though, their third-round pick a year ago. He's the long-term right tackle. Maybe Irving competes there. I don't know if he could play tackle or not, but the offensive line's figured out, I guess. What gives me pause is Terrell Pryor is not re-signed yet with them, and if they just let him walk away, they've essentially developed him a very raw product. They developed extremely well. He's a good talent now, and he's only going up. They developed him for someone else, though. They're getting no return on the time investment they spent on Pryor, and that would be very disconcerting to me, especially when you consider they have no other options at wide receiver. I know Corey Coleman was their first-round pick a year ago. People fell in love with him. Watch his tape and kind of read between the lines. He is extremely raw. Those guys coming out of Baylor, they're not ready for the NFL because Baylor does not play remotely close to an NFL system. So they don't have any weapons at all on offense. They have a bunch of good blockers who have no one to block for.
Yeah. I mean, Kenny Britt was their other addition. I'm not a big Kenny Britt guy, but I feel like he's the kind of guy you plug in. when he's your number two receiver, you say, well, it could be worse, but we'd also like it to be better than this.
Yeah, and that's the story of Kenny Britt's career. He's a nice player. He's got a limited route tree. That's the problem. They didn't want him back in Los Angeles. My guess would be they didn't even give it a second thought just because you can't run everything with Kenny Britt. He's a very specific type of wide receiver. In a lot of ways, he's what Terrell Pryor is now, except you know Britt has hit his ceiling. Pryor's ceiling is still well above his head.
Yeah. Yeah, and the last thing I'll say about the Browns in regards to Pryor here, when I look at the trade, and I think the trade, I understand the logic behind it. I think it's smart. I think it's sound logic. I think it's a good move in the end. But boy, if you take that money that you're sinking into Osweiler, and maybe they can move Osweiler again and free up some of it. But you could front load someone's deal with that. You could slap a franchise tag on Pryor and lock him in for one more year and if you're worried about his sort of his learning curve and his development here. So, yeah. They'll probably end up way under the cap anyway, so it probably won't matter. But I guess that's the trade-off with the buying the draft pick. You can use that cash to front-load someone's deal, and maybe that's a difference when they're chasing some of these guys, a Tony Jefferson or an A.J. Bouye or some of the other guys they were going after.
Well, let's keep in mind also, they believe in building through the draft or accumulating draft picks and assets like that. Mm-hmm. Whether that's right or wrong for a team that has as much cap space as they have, I mean, we could spend a show debating that, but the point is that's their approach. And it's hard to ever fault a team for being consistent with their approach, at least especially when they're in just the second year of that approach. We haven't seen how this NFL Moneyball thing works or not. As I've said, I'm skeptical if they're using it to evaluate talent. I'm optimistic if they're using it to decide how to invest resources across the roster. But we don't know. We'll see on that. But the point is they're a drafting team, and they're going to rely on developing their own talent. So maybe we have it looks bad now, but maybe we have a different tune about them a month from now when it's pure draft season.
Yeah. It was fun. And I'm not even going to say it necessarily looks bad right now. I'd be disappointed if Pryor got away, but that was a fun move. That was interesting. Like I told someone on Twitter, when I saw that come through, I did a spit take, even though I wasn't drinking anything at the time.
Yeah, no, you do that. It's very strange.
Well, let's move on. Let's go to Washington, where I mean, I think there is no doubt things are not going as smoothly as they possibly could be going for the Redskins. I mean, a year ago we were looking at this franchise and saying, okay, they're back on track. They're on a good track. They're not necessarily a sleeping giant here, but they're, you know, they're solidly built. They have their coach. They have their quarterback for the short term. This looks all right. Kirk Cousins signed his franchise tender. He has said that he will not negotiate a long term deal. While Bruce Allen is the president there, and as we know, Scott McLuhan is now out in Washington, so it is Allen and it is Jay Gruden and it is, I'm sure, Dan Snyder calling the shots at this point. But
and the McLuhan thing's tough, and I don't really want to comment on that because you hear rumors. I mean, I would comment if it's you and me sitting at a sports bar, Gary, but it's not appropriate here. It's obviously it's not a good situation, and he's not there anymore, and it's probably not the last we've heard of that. It's too bad. McLuhan, remember, he's the guy that basically built that 49ers team that went to the Super Bowl in 2012. He wasn't the GM at that time, but he was the guy that had laid that groundwork. A talented football evaluator, but his career has really gone off the rails for many of these last several years. So it's tough where they're in. I don't know where the Cousins thing is going. My sense is still he's going to wind up playing for them in 2017, and we're going to do this whole dance again next year. We'll see. The other thing is they've lost their wide receivers. You know, DeSean Jackson got away. Pierre Garçon got away. We talked about that on the last show. That could fundamentally change the nature of their offense because Jackson and Garçon complemented each other very well. Jackson runs vertical routes. Garçon runs in-breaking routes. And together, the way they're designed, that can be hard to defend. And Jay Gruden has always been very good at capitalizing on that. So now he has to look at other options in a different direction.
Yeah, I mean, they know Josh Doxson. We don't know Josh Doxson, so we'll see how
they
goes.
They kind of know him. Doxson sat out most of last year with an injury, so they might not. I guarantee you they don't know him as well as they would have wanted to know him at this time a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah, they also made some moves on the defensive side of the ball. Chris Baker is gone, but they added Terrell McLean and also Stacy McGee. From the Raiders. I remember McGee being an interesting guy like 2 or 3 years ago, and I completely forgot about him because he played only like 20% of the Raiders' snaps.
Well, McGee was a fascinating guy this season. He played only 20% because he was injured for a lot of weeks. Early in the season, around October, he was, at times, he looked as good as almost any D-tackle in the NFL. He had by far his best season of his career when he was on the field. It just wasn't often enough. Baker is, congratulations to him. He's another guy, kind of like my buddy Tony Jefferson, a guy that entered at a low level and steadily improved over the course of his career, and now he's getting to cash in. Mm-hmm. They'll miss him, but McGee is potentially a diamond in the rough for them. He's a really strong guy, physically strong man.
Yeah. Yeah, they also they poached DJ Swearinger from Arizona, so...
That hurts Arizona a lot.
It does, and we'll get to the Cards in a sec. They had a rough day, but yeah, they'll pair Swearinger with I can't believe I'm blanking on his name, Sua Cravens.
Yes,
one of my favorite dudes. That's an exciting safety pairing. I don't know how reliable it is at this point, but it's sort of a boom or bust type of group back there.
I know Arizona felt like Swearinger was markedly improved in coverage. He's always been a good downhill hitter. There's a recklessness that comes with those kind of guys, and he clearly fit into that. But he got over his penalties. The other coaches didn't like him at previous stops because he was unreliable in his technique and coverage, and he'd get penalties. He was a liability. He's not great in coverage, but he was not a liability for Arizona. They badly require safeties to be able to match up and play man-to-man, and now they've lost two of them potentially. Jefferson certainly was one of those guys, and Swearinger had become or was becoming one of those guys. So good for Washington, bad for Arizona. That's how this stuff goes sometimes. It'll be interesting to see I guess who plays center field for him? Is D'Angelo Hall, if he's going to be on the roster, yeah. is he the free safety? Because Cravens and Swearinger, my guess, are both strong safeties. They're not yeah. free safety types.
Yep. Now it'll be they have some talent there. We'll see how Greg Minuski makes that mix. But yeah, Swearinger came on a very affordable deal. Good deal. I like that deal.
What'd they get him for?
It was like 13.5. If you give me 1 second, I'll look it up and I'll just talk and sort of stall for a second while I pull up the numbers here. 3 years, 13.5. No specifics on that contract yet, but 3 years, 13.5. That's pretty good.
Yeah, well, we know it's not going to be more than 13.5 guaranteed, and I agree with you. That is a good deal.
Yep. Let's go to Chicago, and what as of like 3 o'clock Eastern time on Thursday would I thought this would surely be our lead for the show, but it's now like topic number six. Mike Glennon is the new quarterback for the Chicago Bears. The deal is. Let's see, it's 45.5 over 3 years, but it is essentially a one-year deal as far as this goes. It's very similar to sort of what Ryan Fitzpatrick signed last offseason. Tom Pelissero here had it. It's, let's see, 18.5 guaranteed. 16 of that 18.5 is guaranteed in the first year. So they can basically get out from under this deal. I like the deal. I don't love Mike Glennon. I am interested in seeing more of him, though, and he'll get a chance here. And if he's the long-term answer, the Bears can use the year two and year three of this deal to keep him around. This also doesn't preclude them from drafting a quarterback, even with the number three overall pick.
They've got options. Really, they could just, in the media guide, they could label Mike Glennon as not Jay Cutler, because that's what this is. They don't know Mike Glennon either. They know what we know, maybe a tad more, but he hasn't been on the field. They knew that they were ready to move on from Jay Cutler, and Glennon gives them the best chance at catching lightning in a bottle in that process.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would have rather stuck with Cutler if I were the Bears, but I know there's other stuff that goes on with Jay Cutler, and if they didn't want to put up with it anymore, that is their prerogative. Long enough.
Sure, and I think there's with Cutler, it's not just is he moody off the field? Whatever. He's inconsistent mechanically, so mm-hmm. the immense talent he has wavers more than you want it to, and I think in the NFL, guys like that. The only guy I've ever seen who has put together the plus side of that has maintained his highs and not experienced the lows of being inconsistent mechanically and has had a great season over the course of a whole year for that. It's Cam Newton 2 years ago. Typically what you see is what we saw from Cam Newton 1 year ago this past season is guys that are inconsistent mechanically have wild ups and downs, and there's a certain ceiling that gets placed on the offense because of that. And I think Cutler's one of those guys. They feel Cutler's one of those guys. And so at least with Glennon, you can sell optimism. He doesn't have as high a ceiling, but he's not going to go as up and down as Cutler. That's the theory. You sell that to your fan base, and the part that people always overlook, you sell it to the rest of your locker room.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, reading the tea leaves a little bit, the Bucks offered Glennon $8 million per year to stick around as their backup, which he didn't take, obviously. And that's,
that's
if you're
a
Bears fan,
boy, for
that,
a backup.
That is. He would have been the highest paid backup in the league. I mean, they like him there. The Bucks also have Jameis Winston still on his rookie deal for three more years, so they could afford to pay their backup a little bit more. But, Tampa obviously wanted to keep him around, but he's not Jameis Winston, so that makes total sense. So, I don't know. I like the deal. I like the contract. And like I said, it does not stop you, even if you want to use the number three pick on one of these quarterbacks, one of these developmental guys, whoever your favorite guy is coming out this year. I think more likely they use their second pick, or maybe they trade back into the first round to get a guy. It doesn't stop you from doing that. Because even if you use the number three pick, you're basically paying low 20s for your quarterbacks, which is, that's middle of the road.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And, Glennon is probably a better guy in the – and I hate to surmise like this, but just I would think Glennon's a better guy in the film room for a young player than Cutler would have been.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, he was willing to step back once Jameis came in, and apparently they liked him enough that they wanted to keep him around. So I guess that the politics of that worked out. The Bears did some other stuff. They signed Quinton Demps, Deion Sims, Marcus Wheaton, Prince Amukamara, and then obviously Jay Cutler was released, in case you were hoping there would be a quarterback controversy brewing.
Nothing moves the meter on those moves. Wheaton, you know, they basically are replacing Alshon Jeffrey, who's now an Eagle, with Marcus Wheaton. So that's a downgrade, and they're going to be relying on scheme. Dow Loggins, their offensive coordinator, he's going to have some work to do.
Yeah, and they apparently, you know, Bears struck out a couple guys. They tried to keep Jeffrey. He ends up going to the Eagles. We'll get to him a little bit later. They were in on a lot of the cornerbacks before they settled for Amukamara. They were in on reportedly in on Bouye, and they were in on one of the other guys who I'm just blanking right now. Too many things happened.
A lot of they wanted corner help. A lot of moving pieces there. That defense is a lot more talented than people realize. So they may have wanted a corner, and they're probably going to draft one, and they might still try to go find a lower tier guy. But remember, Kyle Fuller was not healthy last year, so they get him back.
Yep.
Tracy Porter's been better than expected. I think Bryce Callahan's okay in the slot. And if you can have a guy who's okay in the slot, you can live with that. Not ideal, but you can live. A lot of teams get killed by their slot. And DeAndre Hall, their fourth-round rookie last season, he looked like a rookie at times, but I was very high on him coming out. He came from the FCS level. But they're better than people realize. Let's put it that way. And I'll tell you, I had a lot of coaches at the Combine tell me this as well. So you know who might have one of the best defenses in the league is the Chicago Bears. And we're talking their secondary right now. Really where they're better is up front. Their edge rushers, their front seven. It's borderline great. We don't know what's going to happen with Danny Trevathan, who got hurt late in the season. But Bears fans, don't fret. You didn't get a free agent on defense. You're better than it appears on that side of the ball.
Yeah. And actually, one last thing I want to mention on the Glennon deal for, you know, maybe they could have gotten him for 10 to 12 or something like that. The Bears really don't have anyone coming up on those expiring rookie deals, so they have to pay in the next year or two. They don't really, you know, Eddie Goldman, maybe. But, you know, they don't have one of those deals. They're not like in the Patriots situation where you're sitting there with Garoppolo and Malcolm Butler and saying, oh, we're going to have to, these guys are going to go from $700,000 a year to, you know, $15 million a year, and that's something we're going to have to deal with. The Bears just don't have those guys. They just didn't draft that well for a couple of years.
Yeah, that's one of the upsides of not drafting well sometimes, I guess.
Yep. There you go. The other corner they were in on is Stephon Gilmore, and that provides a little segue here into our next team, the New England Patriots, because they get Stephon Gilmore. That was their big move thus far. There's obviously a lot of stuff brewing with New England right now, but look, Gilmore was sort of the boom or bust type of guy on the market. He's, I think he's an elite guy when he's playing well. Buffalo, lots of communication issues last year. I think that sort of seeped into the play of their secondary, which was very disappointing. Gilmore might end up being an absolute stud in the secondary.
See what happens with Malcolm Butler. That's an interesting one to me as well. I see Gilmore as the replacement of Logan Ryan, and Logan Ryan is now a Tennessee Titan.
Yep.
So stylistically, Gilmore to me is closer to Ryan than he is to Butler. And supposedly Butler's asking for a lot of money, and there's a good chance he'll be moved. And we've heard the rumor that he goes to New Orleans for Brandon Cooks. That could benefit both teams. Stay tuned on that. Here's what we do know. The Patriots believe in man-to-man coverage, and that's what they're paying Gilmore for. And they've gone against him multiple times a year for many years now. They probably view him as a true number one type corner.
Yeah. No, I think so too. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Butler in the next couple of days here, I guess. Maybe we'll do it in time to catch him on Monday. Patriots made a couple other moves. They trade for Dwayne Allen from Indianapolis, which means Martellus Bennett is gone. He has not landed at the time of this taping. And they also retained Allen Branch and Daron Harmon on defense.
Yeah, I love those defensive moves. Branch was a huge difference maker for them as the season wore on. Unheralded, of course, but a big-time run stuffer. good to see him back. That's New England was his best chance. That's probably where he had the most chance at the money as well, believe it or not. So Branch is a great addition. Harmon is one of those mystery guys because he plays center field for them in their sub packages, meaning he is the last line of defense. Those guys are hard to analyze on film because they might only be near the ball five or six times in a game. The Patriots know what they ask for them. They know what they need. The teams know their own free safeties best because that's their own insurance policy. That's how they feel comfortable. And Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick, ostensibly, they feel very comfortable with Harmon. So it speaks well to him that they would want him back. The other move, the Dwayne Allen one, Gary, that one I'm not so sure about. That one I raised my eyebrows at a little bit because Dwayne Allen, they want flexible tight ends. They want to have two of them on the field. That's why they went out and got Martellus Bennett last year, pair him with Rob Gronkowski. Now you're hard to match up against personnel-wise. You become extremely versatile. You keep defenses off balance. You get matchups in the run game and the pass game. Allen's very good for that in the run game. He's essentially a really athletic H-back, a moving fullback type.
Yeah.
But he is not a threat in the passing game like that. I don't know if he can play the slot. He's certainly not an out-wide receiver, so it's going to be Gronkowski, who's always detaching from the formation. Stylistically, Allen's a very drastic step back from Bennett because Bennett could do everything Gronk does, just not at the highest of level. Allen cannot even do some of the things Gronkowski does. So they're not as versatile as they would have been here if they'd kept Bennett.
Yeah, yeah. The other two question marks. As we tape at this moment, Dante Hightower is still up in the air. Patriots are working to get him back. And Jimmy Garoppolo, who knows what's going to happen. We'll talk about Garoppolo a little bit on Monday. But
Let's let Garoppolo – let's let something happen there. I'm getting tired of the Garoppolo talk. Let's let something happen. Or in this case, if something doesn't happen, that's something happening. In other words, we're going to let this play out. Monday, hopefully. But, I mean, we don't need to force the Garoppolo stuff. We've been over that.
He's so handsome, though.
He is handsome.
It's nice to have him in the T1 of the website. I think it gets us more clicks.
Could be. I mean, you get the retweets from, People Magazine. They're part of Time Warner, right? Just like
there
us. They're our friends over there.
People that is corporate synergy, Andy.
Yeah. I'm with you. Whatever.
Let's stay in the division. Tyrod Taylor, this happened a couple days before free agency really kicked off, but the Bills are keeping on Tyrod Taylor after this whole drama, restructured deal. He's going to be the guy there. It didn't make any sense for them to go in another direction. There weren't good options out there. On top of that, Rick Dennison is there. He has a relationship with Taylor already. Taylor has played under him. If you're going to have a run-heavy offense anyway, it just made all the sense in the world to keep Taylor there as your quarterback, and The Bills' moves suggest that they are going to stay very, very run-heavy here. Robert Woods gets away, but as my friend and, quite frankly, friend of the show, Dan, points out, the Bills must have been listening to our show and to Andy Benoit's soliloquies on the fullback as the new chess piece position because they signed like all of them. They just went fullback crazy.
They did. They took Mike Tolbert and they took Patrick DeMarco, who I thought was Atlanta's fullback. I thought he was the best. I thought those were the two best NFC fullbacks last year. And I thought DeMarco was clearly the best of the two.
I mean, they're going to list Tolbert as a running back, I guess. And, there's a connection there with Sean McDermott as a new head coach. I mean, do you think Tolbert even makes the roster?
He could. It's what's interesting about him. The other guy they looked at was Kyle Juszczyk, and what Tolbert and Juszczyk have in common is they're fullbacks who have experience as third down fullbacks, third down backs, basically. And that might seem nuts because we think of a Danny Woodhead type as a third down back, someone who's darting around and quick and in space. But teams, and especially ones who are conservative like Buffalo, they think protection first. And so they think of blocking fullbacks and third down backs. And that's what Baltimore had in Juszczyk. That's what they're probably going to try to get in Mike Tolbert there. So I would think he would make the roster. I could see that happening. It'll be it's by no means a guarantee, of course. I could see that happening. Hey, by the way, Gary, how did Taylor's money shake out? Because I figured there's no chance at all he'll be on that team if he's getting paid what he was scheduled to get paid. And I'm actually surprised they kept him, but how much of a bath did he take?
I did not see any details. I'll see if it's out right now. Let's see, $3.5 million over the next two seasons. And there are years in the deal after that, but they will void, and Taylor will become a free agent in 2019. This is from Jason LaConfora. So yeah, you know, he's not pulling in that, what was it, the injury guaranteed $30 million it was going to be?
Yeah, and his cap, so his cap hit in 2017 is just $9.7 million, which is lower than a lot. I mean, that's almost backup quarterback money, what we talked about with Mike Glennon there. His cap hit in 2018 would be $18 million. So it looks like he's around for another 2 years. I don't know how that $18 million, we could look in. We need to dig deeper. I don't know what the dead money is if you cut him after this season. Let's just keep it at 30,000 feet, though, because we can get caught up in numbers. And keep in mind, these numbers are moving targets because the salary cap's escalated. So everything's not everything's relative to what it was before. Here's the bottom line. Tyrod Taylor's a guy you have to hide in the offense. He's not a good pocket passer. And so you have to be a very specific, rudimentary type of offense with him. And Buffalo has looked around and realized we have decent running personnel. There aren't other quarterbacks out there. We can live with this for one more season.
Yeah. No, it, you know, like we keep on saying, the alternatives out there, good quarterbacks don't get out on the market. They're not available. Is Garoppolo? Maybe. But, you know, no one knows that for sure. And
that's
you know,
not quite available. You can't just give him money and have him. You're going to have to give him some draft picks as well. So that's that. You could argue that's even more complicated than trying to find a quarterback in a typical year.
Yeah. Yeah, Bill's other side of the ball here. Some interesting things. Gilmore is gone. They also Aaron Williams is gone. He suffered that that really nasty neck injury last year, so his career was in question anyway. But they go out and get Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer, two guys who bring a lot of flexibility to this to the secondary.
Yeah, Hyde more so than Poyer. I don't know if Poyer can slide down and cover the slot or play linebacker and sub packages the way that Hyde does. Green Bay is going to miss Micah Hyde, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
maybe
still
now keep in mind.
That.
Yeah, Morgan Burnett's contract, I believe, is up next year. If I recall, I bumped into his agent at the combine. I think that's what we talked about. And HaHa Clinton Dix will have to be re-upped at some point. He's going to probably set the market at his position or be very near the top of it. So maybe they're looking at this in the long view and saying we have three quality safeties, Hyde, Burnett, who's not old yet. He's not young, but he's not old. And Clinton Dix, and we can only hold on to two of them. We're going to hold on to Burnett and Clinton Dix because Burnett started doing some of the things that Hyde has done. He played the slot in week one and really late in December, if I recall. They were in a bind. They needed him. He did fine there. And he became a linebacker in their dime packages late in the season as well. So he did the things that Hyde has done for them.
Yeah. Steven Hauschka is the new kicker in Buffalo. File that away for special teams player of the week next year.
That's whatever. I mean, he's a nice player, but I can't keep track of where the kickers go. I know there are 32 of them. It seems like it's always the same 32, and they're just reshuffling teams, musical chairs.
That is what goes on a lot. There are a couple other shuffles. Steven Hauschka was supposed to be a dentist, by the way. It's my favorite Steven Hauschka fact.
That's the only Steven Hauschka fact. All right.
And well, I was also so personally devastated. I was personally devastated that Marcus Easley got let go in Buffalo. He is a hometown guy for me. So, core special teamer. Someone go out and get him. You'll get a modern day Kasim Osgood. Moving on to Jacksonville.
There we go. I mean, we got a lot of real free agents to get over here, Gary. And we're nearing our end.
I'll do the Marcus Easley show myself. I'll do that solo sometime later this offseason. Jacksonville, once again, they're right in the running for winning the offseason, I guess. They go out, they get Calais Campbell, Barry Church, and A.J. Bouye. Sendarik Marks is out there. He has been banged up for the last couple of years. Kind of a shame. But, the three guys they added, those are kind of three headliners in this free agent class.
At some point, this is going to have to matter, right? Like, at some point, winning the offseason is going to translate to winning games. I don't think I've seen a team accumulate such an array of talent on one side of the ball over the last 2 years. Malik Jackson played up to his expectations last season. I don't know, his numbers probably weren't what people wanted, but he looked like Malik Jackson on film. He's not quite as good in their system as he was in Denver's, but he's fine. He's fine by star player levels. You put him next to Calais Campbell, and you hope Dante Fowler can improve at edge rusher. Yannick Ngakoue, their third-round pick of last year, got better over the course of the season. They've got a formidable defensive line now. Linebackers can run. Telvin Smith's the fastest linebacker in the league, in fact. That's important in their scheme. You need fast linebackers in that type of zone scheme that they're going to run with Todd Wash there, their new D coordinator. And then Gary, the cornerback situation with Bouye and Jalen Ramsey. I thought Jalen Ramsey, I thought he was the best rookie cornerback in the NFL last season late in the year. And I'm not sure it was even that, you know, tweet us if I'm missing someone. I don't think it was even that close, though. He went toe-to-toe with some really good wide receivers and won. He's huge. Both of those guys are long and can play man coverage. That's what's critical.
Yeah, and you know, Todd Wash stays on. He's a Gus Bradley guy, so you figure they'll run something very similar to what they used a year ago. How do they use Campbell in this? Because Campbell, obviously, he played his whole career as sort of a a 3-4 guy in Arizona.
You know, people talk about that. I think that gets extremely overblown. Most of those 3-4 defenses play the same gap principles as the 4-3 defenses. And for a guy like Campbell, it means it's all a wash. In 3-4, what people mean by that is he's two-gapping. He's holding ground and just clogging up space. Well, Campbell was never that kind of guy. He could do it, but that's a waste of his talent. He's an explosive attacker, and they lined him up at defensive end, D tackle and nose tackle in Arizona, and he was sensational at all of those spots. So I've always seen him as a versatile 4-3 defensive lineman who happens to look like a 3-4 defensive end, and I don't think that does anything for him. I think really the discussion here, if we're talking about how they're going to use players, is how much zone coverage are they going to play? Because with those corners that they have, they really should be playing man-to-man, at least on the perimeter. Bouye and Ramsey, they're too good, they're too talented to just have them sit in zone. I think if you can play man, you need to play man. You need to be the aggressor.
Yeah. Yeah, good news for the Jaguars for a second straight offseason here. Maybe it just comes down to Blake Bortles playing a little bit better this year. They can recapture Blake Bortles 2015.
And keep in mind, he was good 2015. You're not being facetious when you say that. People are saying, "Oh, Blake Bortles, he's the kind of the people want to make him the laughing stock because they need a laughing stock somewhere." He's a good, talented quarterback that had a very bad season last year. Take that for what you want. It'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah. You know, in my opinion, you know, who lost the offseason so far is the Cincinnati Bengals. They kept Dre Kirkpatrick, so that was a win right there, but they lose Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler. These were the two good guys on what was a bad offensive line last year. So I don't know what you do offensively here. I mean, you need a complete rebuild of the front five.
Well, I think what they would tell you is we have a veteran O-line coach in Paul Alexander, a mainstay here. We let him teach a lot with his own rules. He's an unconventional instructor, but it's worked. We trust him, and we gave him first-round and second-round offensive tackles a few years ago, and Jake Fisher, the second-rounder, and Cedric Ogbuehi, the first-rounder. Go play. That's we've done our part in the front office. Go play. Make it work.
Boy, it just didn't work out very well last year. Well, I know Fisher wasn't on the field much, but
no, it didn't last year. You're right, but those are their players. That's what you got. I mean, what you're saying, and I'm not saying you're saying it, but the other alternative would be just cut bait and let those draft picks wash away. And you got to play. Those are talented guys still. That's why they were drafted high. You've got to give them the chance to fully recognize their talent. It might blow up in your face, but that's professional football. There are more spots than good offensive linemen available, so you're already dancing a dangerous dance. They do need to find a guard, though. You're right, because Whitworth was the one guy who could have theoretically replaced Zeitler because he was very good. Whitworth was when he had to play guard. So, yeah, they do have a gaping hole there. You're right. But those other guys, those offensive tackles, they got to play.
And that's why I thought the Whitworth loss was so devastating. I mean, I know he's 35, and you know, how much longer can you count on him? But he fills in. He fills in wherever you want him to fill in. And they have just they have five question marks on the front line right now. So,
yeah, they do. You're right. And how about the Rams, by the way? Maybe that's where we touch and end next here.
Let's go Rams.
They've done a lot. Boy, are those new guys cleaning house or what? They are overhauling that roster.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Whitworth was a big one. You know, it's funny when I, you know, just from a little, you know, factoid bar trivia type thing, when they hired Sean McVay, I went and looked, you know, how many players on this roster are older than Sean McVay? Do you know how many players were older than Sean McVay when he was hired?
I think it's zero. I think it's a young roster.
It was one. Just William Hayes, who they, by the way, traded.
Yeah, they got rid of him. McVay's not going to get pushed around like that, of course. Now he's the old man around. William Hayes is out, and Hayes was a nice player too. So that's that. Yeah. He might have an ageism suit somewhere in there.
Yes. Yeah, he was shipped off to Miami, but they you know, they make the big splash. They get Whitworth. Greg Robinson is going to either kick inside or move to the right side, and I guess they'll sort that out. But any changes are good changes for that offensive line. And like we've been talking about, Whitworth is still a star. He's up there in age, but he's still very, very good.
And they need to get that line stabilized. They could not play with that line last year in Los Angeles. Those guys could not run. There's a run in the NFL called duo, like two. And what it is double teams at both spots inside. So two double teams right up the middle, you run behind it. It's the classic run to get you 3 to 4 yards and maybe more. And if you can't run that in the NFL, then they did not run that with any kind of consistency last year. You can't compete. So they needed some guys that were simply good enough to let them run their plays and give Jared Goff a semblance of an opportunity to grow. And Whitworth does give you that. Even though I think it's interesting, he'll have to learn. Remember we talked Paul Alexander a second ago and how he's unconventional. They teach very different mechanics there in Cincinnati. So Whitworth will have to adjust his mechanics and probably learn some new stuff. I'm sure he'll be able to do it. It's going to be a repetition thing. But I was surprised that a guy in his mid-30s with kids and establishment in Cincinnati, and I'm surprised he'd want to move out there to L.A. and learn a new way to block. But clearly he feels he's got many years. I would think he's got many years left in his mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is good news for Todd Gurley. They also added Robert Woods, who's, you know, he's a solid complimentary guy for that receiving core. They still don't really have a true number one type guy. But Woods is a very good blocking receiver as well.
Good point.
And, you know,
they could use that. They run outside zone, and so you're going to want your receivers blocking at some point. Gurley has to be better, by the way. It's a lot of people would say, oh, well, the O-line was bad. Gurley was a victim of that. And there's some truth to that. Gurley also was a bad running back last season. He was not the same as his rookie year. He's very similar to Jeremy Hill in that kind of step back as a sophomore. So he has something to prove, and they're going to help him out by giving him better guys around him.
Yep. Let's go off to Philadelphia. And, they did what they had to do here. They had a very slow, plodding group of receivers that Chip Kelly had brought in when he sort of jettisoned all their athletic guys. And they went out, they got Torrey Smith, and then they got even better with Alshon Jeffrey on a one-year prove-it deal.
I like the Jeffrey acquisition. You need a guy that can make some contested catches, and I think Carson Wentz, they teach him to be very cautious there, like get the ball out quickly. So not cautious so much as just decisive and take the simple approach, gain the yards that are there. But Jeffrey gives you that ability to throw the contested ball and have success now. And Wentz is a guy who will be willing to throw the contested ball. He's got a lot of Andrew Luck type of traits. The Torrey Smith signing to me doesn't make sense. I'll just be blunt. I don't think he's a quality NFL wide receiver. He doesn't run good routes. He doesn't separate well for a guy with his speed. What he is a really good north and south fast runner. That's the extent of it. But he's not good. That's not the type of guy that's going to produce for you. And I would be surprised if that – I don't think he's going to influence coverages the way you would expect a guy of his speed to do.
Yeah?
No, I'm not a Torrey Smith
guy. He's fast. If you're going to be one thing, be fast. That has to do something to concern opposing safeties.
He's fast, but I don't think he's football fast. He's inconsistent with that. He is very stiff, and they've got enough. That's their problem in Philadelphia. They have a lot of stiff guys. Now, the stiff guys they have are also slow. So stiff and slow is a bad combination to be in.
Yeah.
Believe me, I tried. They wouldn't let me in because I was stiff and slow. Torrey Smith at least is fast. So, yeah, you're right with that in that regard, but there's no nuance to his route. He's not fast in and out of his breaks, so he can get from point A fast, but when he has to cut into point B, everyone catches up to him because he's not quick or efficient. So he's just a very limited wide receiver. He's a fast guy and little else, and I don't think you can do a lot with a guy like that. I think that's why Baltimore let him get away a few years ago, and it's why he disappeared in San Francisco, a team that ran a lot of horizontal routes rather than vertical routes. Philadelphia does that too. They're a very horizontal passing offense, and he's not going to fit well there. He's not going to catch 30 balls for him.
Yeah. Last team we're going to cover today, and we will have plenty more on the Monday show, but just wanted to touch on the 49ers, who made a whole lot of moves. They brought in all the Bears quarterbacks not named Jay Cutler. They got Brian Hoyer. They got Matt Barkley. Pierre Garçon is there. Kyle Juszczyk. Malcolm Smith, Marquise Goodwin, Aldrick Robinson, Robbie Gold, another kicker. It looks like Hoyer is going to run that Kyle Shanahan offense. The two work together in Cleveland.
I feel nothing when we say these guys. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen such a spectacular array of mediocre free agents in my life. These guys aren't bad players. They're not good. These are just simply the 49ers' new players. That's all there. I mean, I don't know what there is to talk about here.
They're guys. They'll have new guys. They'll have new jerseys available in the pro shop. Stuff is going on.
Garcon's the only one that has a unique skill set. Hoyer can run an NFL offense, so you give him that. And keep in mind, Kyle Shanahan's the best designer of offense in the league right now. And I would even say it's not that close. I think other people in the league feel the same way. So, okay, there. I guess you got Hoyer and you've got Garcon. The rest of it, though, I mean, those are their new players. There's nothing more to it. They're guys. Jags, just a guy, as Bill Parcells used to call them.
Marquise Goodwin, very fast. Yeah, kind of like Torrey Smith.
Yeah, we just talked about that. Now, he's faster than Smith, too. So,
yeah.
The one thing he can do, to his credit, that Smith can't do, is he can run comeback routes along the perimeter. And why that's important is because guys play so off coverage on him with such cushion, you've got to be able to convert into some hook routes and make him pay for that. And Goodwin has shown that he can do that.
Yeah. No,
Not every snap. He's not an every guy, every down player.
Yeah. No, I'm glad he's sticking around. Kaplan did that story on him last year when he was going into the Olympic trials, and then he ended up not making the Olympics. And we were like, oh, that's a bummer, because now he's going to get cut from the Bills as well. I'm just glad he's still sticking around. Good for him. He's a good
dude. And he deserves it. He has learned the NFL receiver craft enough to stick around. I commend him for that.
Yep.
He's not going to change the makeup of your offense.
Yep. Lots more guys coming up on Monday's show. We're going to wrap it for now, but we still got to talk to Sean Jackson, Brandon Marshall, Matt Khalil, and Julius Peppers. And we're assuming there will be some more signings this weekend. So we'll have some more stuff to talk about. If there's not, we're just going to, I don't know, we'll probably just lead with Vince Young signing with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
There you go.
But, we will wrap it for now. Thank you very much to producer Matt Havia for putting up with us this weekend. Also, Chris Basil turning this thing around quickly for us and making us sound good. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode, this very special episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. You guys are the best. We'll be back Monday. We'll try and fit some mailbag stuff in there. If we don't get to it Monday, we will have like a mailbag show coming up at some point because we're backed up with stuff right now. So send them in, Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI, send them to Facebook or talkback@themmqb.com. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys on Monday morning.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.